Accession number 19066, Real One.
Magma Crystal, Real One, where were you born, please?
In Lancashire, in Wigan, of all places.
Which year was this?
1923.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Wigan?
No. I moved to near Bolton, not very far away from Wigan, till I was 10, then moved to Preston, where I went to grammar school there.
And how old were you when you finished at the grammar school?
18.
So that would have been 1941?
1941, that's right.
Had you heard Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany in 39?
Indeed.
Under what circumstances?
Well, I was at home. I got on my bicycle and rode down the road to tell my father, who'd been to church, I'd been earlier, that we had listened to Chamberlain, and that was at 11 on that morning.
How did you feel about the news yourself?
Oh, excited, probably. 16, 17. 16 and a half. Yes.
And your parents' reaction?
Oh, more sober. Because my father had been, he'd been out in India in the First War, Great War. Afghanistan, he fought in. So then he knew. I mean, older people know that it's not going to be quite as exciting. I suppose to a 16-year-old, it's reasonable to be excited.
And did the war affect you at all between 39 and 41 when you were a schoolboy?
No, not really. I was in the sixth form then, first 2 years. You know, there was bombing. Even I lived in a village near Preston.
Called what?
Frackleton, near Splitham St Anne's, on the estuary of the Ribble, the north bank, small village. But we did have one stick of bombs that broke the front room windows, which was strange for somewhere, I suppose, 30, 35, 40 miles north of Liverpool, where all the bombing was taking place. My wife, I didn't know my wife then, of course, but she used to study for her A-levels down in the cellar in the Dockland area of Liverpool, so she knew what it was all about.
So when you left school, what happened to you then?
I went to Liverpool University, where I met my wife-to-be. We had a year. You were allowed a year. Without being, you know, you could, I don't know what they called it then. If you were a medical student, you spent the next 5 or 6 years till you'd completed your course. But other faculties, you got the first year.
What were you studying as well?
Classics. And we had a weekly training, army training, in the STC, Senior Training Corps, which was followed at the end of the year by weeks, 3 weeks. I guess I did 6 weeks of a training camp in North Wales, Harlech, and that was the, so that by the time you actually joined up in September, end of August, you were ready to, we went to a pre-op to officer training unit, Rootham it was in Kent, 6 weeks basic training. Don't think I've ever been as fit as I was then at the end of this 6 weeks. Learned to drive 3 tonners and motorbikes. Frightening, really, when you think of somebody at 18, 19, able to go out on the roads doing 80 on the Maidstone bypass. quite strange. I always remember Monday, you were shown which, excuse me, showed you which part of the motorbike you use for the various bits and bobs. And Tuesday you did the same and drove round a closed circuit, round a field and round a lane. And Wednesday, doing 80 on the Maidstone bypass, and feeling lucky when you got in at night that you'd survived the day. Strange. That's when you could do that sort of thing in those days. Then I went to the Isle of Man. This is why mentioning MacDonald Fraser. I read somewhere, I think it was in one of the Sunday magazines, there was an article about him. I met him at that reunion in 95.
You should say this is George MacDonald Fraser, who's written a book about the
yes.
North Borders called Quartered Servant.
Yes, that's right. So I had 4 months there.
Were you with a unit there?
No, it's in the officer training unit. It's there were three or four in the country at the time. One was the Isle of Man. And I was commissioned in March 43, I suppose.
What did you gather that they wanted from an officer from your courses?
Well, you were training to become an officer in an infantry battalion. So there were a number of people who tried to move into the intelligence area. Perhaps a bit safer, I don't know. But it didn't work out very well for most people.
Why
and,
not?
Well, I mean, they didn't want people, not a lot of people in the intelligence corps, but they did need officers in an infantry battalion, really, I suppose. When you look at the... I mean, I remember the day when later, much later, when I was wounded in Burma, and reading the report of the battalion many, many years later, and seeing that on the very day that I was wounded, when Major Cooper got his MC, same battle, it was, I don't know, it's you remember what happened, but without really being able to remember. It's strange. But I remember reading that Second Lieutenant Weston, I think his name was, I'm sure his name was, whom I didn't know, who had joined the battalion probably only a matter of days and killed on that day. And someone had joined the battalion, you never knew him, you never met him. It was quite tricky, really, to, you know, looking back, I suppose at the time it would have been just somebody else that wasn't yourself. But
what did you think of the quality of the officers' training that you had?
I think it was very good. It's yes, I think it was very good. I don't know that it prepares one particularly for the actual business. And of course, it depends where you are as well. I mean, it's always, I've always thought, and talking to people in different areas of the war, that people I would have hated to have been in France after D-Day with tanks and shells and guns and everything going on like that. And equally so when talking to people the same who had been through that would say, oh, thank God I wasn't out in Burma in the jungle and this sort of thing. It depended what you were in, I think, but to which you adjusted.
The reason I asked you this about the kind of things they were looking for on officers' training is because I've just interviewed a chap who was with a Gurkha battalion in Burma, and he gave the impression that they were looking for qualities related to whether or not the candidate was gentlemanly rather than a warrior. So he said that if you stuck your fag end behind your ear, you were immediately out. Is this a false impression that he's given or not?
It would depend, I suspect, on which training, officer's training unit he was with, and perhaps the battalion with which he was training later. I mean, if he was this out in India? When he
was in this country.
In this country. I think you could all, everyone could probably find some kind of similar incident to recall and remember that, and particularly if they had some senior officer in the battalion that was typical of that sort of approach. I think probably they would. I think everybody could remember somebody like that. But on the whole, you simply did the training. You became skilled in the actual use of the rifles and the Bren guns and all the rest of it. Map reading and so on, which you needed that in Burma, certainly. Most people got lost more than they when it was quite tricky at the time, early days.
So you were commissioned in 43, you say?
Yes, I joined the King's Liverpool simply because I'd been at university there. It was just a battalion that was running the group of officers and sergeants doing the training were King's Liverpool people. So I did, and I then went to Norfolk, just north of Yarmouth in the Broads there to an East Lancs holding training battalion, and they had the same sort of thing I was mentioning earlier to you. The people coming there were soldiers and officers from all the kind of regiments that you'd expect to meet in Lancashire. King's, East Lancs, South Lancs, Manchester Regiment, this sort of thing. And you were given a platoon of men to train, as well as being trained yourself. And after a month, they would go abroad. You took on another 30, and they would go. After the third one, then you went as well, so that you'd done three months of training.
What number did this battalion have?
What, men?
No, was it the third or fourth?
It was the fourth East Lancs, it was. but there were there was one company commander who was a King's Liverpool, a major there. There were a fair grouping of North West Lancashire and Lancashire people. And then you, after 3 months, we sailed from Bristol, Avonmouth, sailed up to the Clyde, then back out again into the Atlantic, halfway across, then south round to Freetown, then down to Durban. 3 weeks in Durban. And then another 3 weeks, a month to India.
What was the voyage like?
It wasn't bad. It was the main one. It was a better ship from Durban to India, but the ship from England. It was the Moreton Bay. 14,000 tons, I think. Sister ship of the Jarvis Bay that had an incident in the war against submarines. They're Australian, I think, based. I suppose the place is there, aren't they? And quite interesting, really. There were, I can't exactly recall, but there were cabins on the top deck to which majors and above, they enjoyed that. There were some 40, 50 wrens, some of the first to be going out there to Colombo. And there'd be two decks of troops in hammocks and so on. And then two further down, you know, the sort of gangways like that. And on the bottom, well below the waterline, but in bunks around the side of the ship and in the centre were for officers, captains, lieutenants, second lieutenants. You were supposed to sleep in your boots and uniform, but after a day or two, it was pretty obvious that anything that happened, if there'd been a strike by a submarine and the thing torpedoed, nobody on that level would have seen daylight again. So everybody started wearing pyjamas and that sort of thing to get back into the... It was, you know, I forget how many troops there would be on, but, you know, 2,000 or 3,000, I suppose, plus. So to get those up 4 flights of gangways, it wouldn't have been possible to finish. So, interesting. But, nobody thought anything about it. Just at the time, it seemed slightly amusing. And Bombay, the big transit camp that everyone goes to, the Dulali, you'll have heard of that, no doubt, many a time.
Which month did you arrive in India?
August, I think.
43?
Yeah, 43.
What were your impressions of India on arrival?
Well, the thing that I would always remember if I were suddenly dropped in the night on a plane or outside a town or somewhere in India and just woke up, I would know I was in India by the smell. It was peculiarly different from England or whatever. It was always there. I'm sure that would be what I would always remember. Bombay, quite a good, interesting city, but you didn't. I mean, you were moved out into the transit camp, which was some 20 miles up the road, up the Dulali. I did have a leave there in later times. And you stayed there not really doing very much training, but till they'd sorted it out. Things would slow. There was no urgency about anything happening. And it was a pleasant enough few weeks. And then we were sent off to join various cities, battalions who were on internal security, which in fact the Ninth Border had been for a year. They'd already been there for a year in Calcutta, and they'd gone up into Assam, Shillong in the hills, and they left beginning of November, I think, roughly. Ray Cooper would know exactly what day, because he was actually there. good photograph in his book, actually, of the battalion, drawn up, mules, horses, etc., before moving up into Burma. And of course, to get up there was a massive business. You went by train, and finally crossed the Brahmaputra River, all part of the system. I'd have done that journey several times later, but you know, the sort of river steamers, as in America, Mississippi, you know, the same sort of ships. And then at finally the last bit was done by rail until getting into Assam, Burma proper.
Where did you join the Ninth Border Zone?
I joined them in Burma, in Tidim. I joined them end of November. They'd been there 2 or 3 weeks. And the road, such as it was, coming north to south, parallel to, you know, looking at the map of Burma, you've got the Chin Hills, if you're looking at it on the left, on the western side, then the Chinwin, and over the Irrawaddy, sort of three parallel lines, really, the Chinwin joining the Irrawaddy further south. But this road through from north of Kohima, which was one of the great battles fought during 44, down into the plain of Imphal, and then another 160-170 miles further south, following the same line to a small village town called Tidim. And a few miles south of that was Fort White, which the Japanese had occupied. And the plan was that the Japanese were planning to move across. If you imagine the line down from Kohima south to Tidim, they were going to come across the mountains from the east, from Burma, and cut off. We were in 17th Division, Indian Division, which was two light brigades, five Gurkha battalions, plus the Ninth Border. There were divisional troops that had the West Yorks in. They were particularly involved, but they were not working as a three battalion brigades. They were divisional troops to be used by the commander Cowan. Major General Cowan was the commander. And they did, in fact. We spent, I spent December, January, February, were lots of patrolling.
So could I just ask you, when you joined the battalion at Tidim, what did you find? Did you just find a lot of tents or what?
When I... well, it's funny. When I arrived, of course, it was dark. I was taken to the battalion headquarters alongside the road. My stuff was put on a little jeep, and I was sent along...